Hi everyone, welcome to another edition of the 19th Hole Golf Show. I'm Ryan Ballingy, great to have you here with us. Get a hold of me on Twitter, at Ryan Ballingy, and a special push this week if you can. If you head over to youtube.com and find Golf News Net, you can follow us there. We really appreciate it. We're trying to get our subscriber count up to the 1,000 mark. Even though we have like 25,000 TV subscribers, we only have like 800 and some YouTube subscribers. So we're trying to get to 1,000. Because that allows us to start getting paid for our work through YouTube instead of them just being able to run the content for free with no payment to us for the ads that they run. So we get a cut of that, and we would like that. We're going to do more and more video. We're trying to make that transition, and I'll talk about that maybe a little bit at the end of this podcast. But if you can head over to YouTube, look for Golf News Net, and subscribe to us, it'd be greatly, greatly, greatly appreciated. So I want to start this week talking about the changes to the FedEx Cup, changes to the PGA Tour calendar that begin after this week. The PGA Tour finalized a bunch of stuff that had kind of been rumored about, kind of been bandied about, and probably had been leaked to, I'm almost certain it was leaked, to the Associated Press's Doug Ferguson, so that they could kind of test the waters on how this new version of the FedEx Cup would be received. But this week being the Tour Championship, being the end of the PGA Tour season, even though a new one starts in like 3 weeks, the PGA Tour kind of announces big changes for the following season. And this is the biggest change they've had basically since 2009, when they went to the tournament and in a tournament and then a reset, and having the top five being eligible to win the FedEx Cup outright if they win the Tour Championship. And so with this renewal, this extension of their deal with FedEx, they've kind of instituted, I guess, 6 or 7 different big things that are going to come up. So the first thing is money. Money has basically doubled in terms of the bonus pool money available to players as a result of the extension of the deal with FedEx, meaning the $35 million bonus pool paid out to the top 150 players in the final FedEx Cup standings will increase by $25 million to $60 million starting next season. So that means the winner of the FedEx Cup will now receive $15 million instead of $10 million, which, all right, hey, they got it, whatever. In addition, there's going to be a new regular season bonus pool sponsored by Wyndham, who, curiously enough, sponsors the regular season finale, the Wyndham Championship, in Greensboro. And this is a $10 million pool that will pay out to the top 10 finishers in the regular season on the FedEx Cup points list. The winner of the regular season will get $2 million. 10th will get $500,000. Not a bad deal at all. And it puts a little bit of extra life into the Wyndham Championship, which was kind of the point. The idea that having a season-long, regular season-long race might entice some players to also give more interest to the Wyndham Championship, perhaps compete in it, more TV interest because there would be an additional purse. I don't know that that actually is going to work out that way. But it is interesting to see the PGA Tour finally emphasizing the regular season in addition to what they're trying to do with the playoffs. The playoffs themselves are now 3 events. They've thrown out the Dell Technologies Championship. Moving forward, there's basically going to be alternating years for the Northern Trust between New York and Boston. So it'll be either at Liberty National in Jersey City, New Jersey, or it will be at TPC Boston every other year, back and forth. It'll start with 125 players. That event and the BMW Championship, the other playoff event before the Tour Championship, will have quadruple points like they've had for a while compared to a regular PGA Tour event. And that 125 will be whittled down to 70 for the BMW Championship. So the biggest cut is the first. It has always been the other way. The final cut has always been the biggest. You've cut 25 guys, then 30 guys, then 40 guys. So you went from 125 to 100 to 70 to 30. Well, Now we're going from 125 to 70 at the BMW and again to 30 at the Tour Championship. Once you get to the Tour Championship, that's where the real craziness starts. So the PGA Tour has long had this kind of two-tournament vibe at the Tour Championship. You have the Tour Championship itself as an event with its own separate purse, its own payout, and then you've had the FedEx Cup, which was decided by the final results of the Tour Championship, but not necessarily one and the same. And we've had years where the FedEx Cup winner didn't win the Tour Championship, or the guy who did win the FedEx Cup and the Tour Championship, had he not won, there would have been a playoff for the FedEx Cup, or there would have been some kind of other kind of issues, logistical problems for the PGA Tour and the fan to sort out to figure out who won what. And so with this new agreement with FedEx, they wanted to make it much easier for the fan to understand when they're watching the Tour Championship, which now will end before Labor Day. So the season ends in August. They wanted to make it super easy for the fan, casual fan, tuning in before college football or before professional football on Sundays, before the NFL. Who's winning and what does it mean? So now they've basically turned the Tour Championship into a handicap tournament. And what I mean by that is they're going to give players head starts against par based on their seed going into the Tour Championship. So, for example, the number one player heading into Eastlake this year is Bryson DeChambeau. If we were playing this tournament next year, he would start the Tour Championship at 10 under par before a shot is ever struck. Then you would go down the line of the top five, and they would be one shot less than the previous person. So 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, a guy at 5 at 6 under par, and then five different ranges basically of players in groups of five and their starting position. So if you were outside the top five, and so you have 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, so from 6 to 10, you would start at 5 under par, and then 4 under par, 3 under par, 2 under par, 1 under par, and even. So if you are ranked 26th through 30th going into the Tour Championship next year, you have to overcome a 10-shot deficit over the leader over the course of 72 holes to win the tournament. But the kicker is, if you win the Tour Championship, you win the FedEx Cup. There will no longer be a separate prize pool for the Tour Championship. It'll just be the FedEx Cup and $15 million to the winner. So they've tried to make it as easy as possible for a fan to get what's going on and basically bastardize the concept of a professional golf tournament where everyone starts at the same level. And they tried to do this as a way of taking what they had done with the points reset and giving everyone who qualifies for the Tour Championship a mathematical chance of winning the FedEx Cup, either if you're in the top five with a high finish or if you're outside of that, by winning the Tour Championship and then having stuff go your way. And they wanted to do that, keep that scenario alive where the top 30 players have a mathematical chance or a conceptual chance of winning the FedEx Cup if everything went their way. So now for a player ranked below 20th, basically, in the standings to have a chance, they need to overcome a 9 or 10 shot deficit starting the tournament. And that could mean the top players having a bad tournament is what you need to go the right way. Because you're probably not beating someone that hot by 10 shots out the gate. And you would need to beat them by 11 if they were the top seed to get to the Tour Championship trophy and therefore the FedEx Cup. Now here's the funky part to me. I will come back to the reset in a second. But from an official World Golf Ranking standpoint, this tournament gave 60 first-place points last year to Xander Schauffele. 60. That's higher than most European Tour events. Most of them. No, especially the ones outside the WGCs and majors, higher than almost all of them. And now we're going to do that potentially for a handicap tournament. I don't know that the tours that support the official World Golf Ranking are going to be okay with the PGA Tour doing it this way. So there may be something to come on that front. That will still have to be worked out that will be very interesting to see, because if the official World Golf Ranking folks just go with it and say, we're going to offer the world ranking points as the same because the rules are stated and the players know it ahead of time, that's going to be a big problem for players in the European Tour, Asian Tour, other tours. It's going to be an issue. But that's something we'll have to address when that comes up and hopefully gets explored by the folks at the official World Golf Ranking. How does this work? Is it work? Is it a good idea? I don't think the PGA Tour really cares whether the players like it. I think that they care about two things, and primarily one thing. They care whether FedEx likes it, and FedEx should like it, because now the season culmination is easy to understand. The FedEx Cup is easier to understand. All you got to do is win the Tour Championship, whatever your handicap, you win the money. I think that's about as simple as they can make it, but I don't think that this is the way to determine the champion, because this bastardizes the concept of a professional golf tournament. Any golfer's sensibility that's ever played in a gross tournament is appalled by the idea of giving someone a 10-shot head start in a tournament, or even a one-shot head start. I don't want to give you a head start in a tournament. That's horrible. I hate playing guys who are 20 handicapped sometimes, because I know they're going to get a poke on me on every hole and two on a couple of holes. Why would I like that? That's not fun. I don't care what their handicap is. If they play better than their handicap, I could be dead in the water. So I think the PGA Tour didn't necessarily think the reaction of competitive golfers, of actual golfers, through, which is to say, I mean, yeah, I get it, but this isn't how you should do it. And so the responses on Twitter were pretty rapid and vociferous, and they ranged in a variety of things, from jokes, seriousness, satire, better suggestions. My facetious suggestion was, let everyone start with the same score, but limit the number of clubs they can use based on their seeding, 14 all the way down to 1. It'd be so much funner that way. Can you imagine the 27th ranked player trying to win the FedEx Cup with a 4-iron or a 2-iron, and that's it? How fun would that be? I would love it. I think it would be riveting television. They will never do anything like that, but it would be pretty neat. You could also do an idea of having the old plus one from college football, where you did the BCS, and then you had the reseeding, and you had the plus one game for the national championship, which ultimately wound up in a playoff, obviously. But the plus one concept wasn't a bad idea. You could have the Tour Championship just be a tournament of 30. And then, based on that, wherever you finished in the standings, let's say the top 8 went to a one single round tournament for $10 million. That, I think, would have been the best idea. That's how I would have done this. I would have kept the quadruple points for each of the tournaments. So you'd have your 2,000 first-place points for the 125, the 70, and 30, the three events. And you would start the Tour Championship on Wednesday. You would complete it on Saturday. And then on Sunday, you would take the final top 8 in the standings and shove them out there for one round for $10 million. How cool would that be? Just one round of golf. That's all you've got to be able to do. If you can do that, you win $10 million. I mean, that's pretty great. I don't care who you are. That's what this should have been in 2007. It should have been in 2008, 9, now. I mean, it should always be that way. But the problem with that is the PGA Tour would gamble that the top 8 would not be superstar players, wouldn't be name draws. And golf is super afraid at a professional level to stray away from the formula, the names that have worked in the past. And so they stick with them. I mean, that's someone on Twitter put this very brilliantly, I thought, and I'm sorry if I'm stealing your content, because I basically am. But there's a reason why we watch Tiger shots even when he plays poorly. There's a reason they show Phil Mickelson a lot when he's playing like garbage. There's a reason the veterans, the major winners, get a lot of TV time even when they're not playing well. is because those are names a casual fan might know. And you don't... Golf telecasts are made to not alienate the casual fan, instead of welcome and embrace the hardcore fan. And it's something golf has failed to understand forever. You can have both. You can have a broadcast that appeals to the average person, and you can have a broadcast that appeals to the hardcore golf fan who knows who CT Pan is and knows that his wife was caddying for him at the Wyndham, and that he kind of said something that he probably shouldn't have as a new husband. And all people know those details if you're a hardcore fan. If you're a casual fan, you're like, I just want to see Tiger and Phil and DJ. Well, that's okay. I get it. But if they're not in the tournament, then show them 118. Then that's it. Don't waste the time of trying to build up new stars by giving this coveted window that you have every day, 4 days a week, and waste it on showing guys that aren't going to win, that aren't the future, that aren't can't be developed into superstars. I, as you may know if you follow me on Twitter, I'm a big darts fan. Become one over the last couple of years, in part because I work from home, and I'm always looking for something to watch that's not depressing news. And so I turned on darts one day in like December of 2016. It was hooked. Love darts. Love watching darts. It's a fun sport to watch because it's quick. The pace is great. There's always action. There's never a let-up. And, most importantly, I think, the sport embraces all of their characters. Everybody has walk-on music. I'm not saying golf needs that. But everyone has their own walk-on music. Everyone has their own personality. They have their own subset of fans. Some players are more popular than others. Some are not. Some embrace the crowd. Some not as much. Some are a little bit flashier. Everyone has their tics. Everyone has their favorite finishes, how they want to end a game of darts. It's all different. And people embrace that. And more importantly than that, the sport embraces it. The sport embraces that there could be two random players at the finish because it's effectively a match play affair. You just kind of bracket your way down. And week after week, especially in the smaller events, the ones that aren't on TV, the ones that are streamed online, you could get an unseeded player playing a top five player in the world for $25,000. Well, 25,000 euros. And they promote the player that is unseeded. You know the known quantity. You know the seeded player. They've already got people rooting for them. And you talk about them, of course, because they're in the action. But they embrace the fact that this player is surged up, had a great day, maybe hasn't done this before, hasn't done it in 5, 6 years, a decade, whatever it is. And pumps that up and makes them feel like, at least for today, they are on the level of that seeded player. We don't do that in golf very well. We kind of often assume that the better player will win. We assume that the guy that is ranked 210th in the world and is challenging for a PGA Tour event is going to fold his cards eventually and the better player is going to win. And we talk about it that way. We have separate commentary for all-timers, Hall of Famers, good players, middling players, and journeymen. It's all different. But particularly down the bottom half, the bottom end, the commentary almost sounds like you're just waiting for a disaster. And it doesn't build up players as potential equals, even though the players themselves would tell you there are more players that can win every week now than there have ever been in professional golf. Back in the era of the golden age of television, the first golden age of television, when Arnie and Jack and Gary and Trevino and Watson and guys developed, there weren't that many players behind them that could win. That's why those guys, in part, had so many high finishes, because the people behind them just simply were not as good. There weren't opportunities for them to play high-caliber, well-run championship tournaments outside of the occasional Monday qualifier, the occasional, you didn't travel around to Monday Q all the time. That's why there wasn't a fully exempt tour until 1983, I believe it was 83, when Dean Bean was like, this is stupid. We need guys that can show up every week, the same guys, so they play well, so they can make a living, so that we can market them and talk about them on television. And Instead, in the 60s and 70s and 50s, the best players, the ones that were raking in all the money, would just go around from city to city. They wouldn't have to Monday qualifier. If they did, they were good as gold anyway, or better than everybody else. They got in the tournament, and then they just slaughtered people who were just happy to be there. We don't have that now. We have players all the way down into PGA Tour, Latino America, China, and Canada who are fully capable, and I will throw in the Challenge Tour as well, and the Asian Tour, who are fully capable of someday becoming a top 50 player in the world if they just get their act together and if they figure out how to play tournament golf and they figure out how to manage their travel and get the money and get the financial support they need to continue doing their development. The opportunities are available. And even beyond those tours, you still have developmental mini tours, Swing Thought, Golden State Tour, the E Tour, the Adams Tour. I mean, it's just through the number of opportunities is astounding, whether you want to be a top 50 golfer in the world or you just want to make a living playing golf. You've got options, and they're good ones, and they're well run. They're not shady for the most part. That didn't exist. And so we still haven't adjusted our thinking, despite having, I would say, a depth of 500 to 700 players who could potentially someday be really, 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 really good. And we talk about them still, to this day, when they fight against Goliath, like they're idiots. Like they're just happy to be there and have no business competing and have no talent whatsoever. And they're just a vomit bag, a human vomit bag, waiting to happen. And Tartts never does that. And you never feel like, even though you probably know that underdog doesn't have a chance, you never really are told they don't have a chance. Or that they would do well to achieve a certain result. That doesn't work out that way. You just let them take a rip at it, and if it happens, it happens. And it does sometimes. It does in golf too. But we don't promote our stars that way. And so we get into these situations where the hardcore golf fan wants to see more players, wants to see them of all levels, whether they're succeeding or failing, but you want to see the guys that are playing well that week, and I have no interest in seeing guys that aren't playing well that week. Maybe a shot here or there just to remind you that they've played, but that's not the arc of the tournament. They're not the arc of the tournament. And so we get these things where you get the tour afraid of not having marquee players in a field because they have never done the work to develop top players. They develop themselves by winning. You never develop the medium players based on their personality. You never give them airtime so no one knows who the hell they are. And then they get to a stage like this where you really have, what, 10, 12, 15 superstars right now. I would argue 10 people, probably people know outside of golf. And then you get another 20 people in this field, and you're like, wait, what if one of the 20 wins? Or what if we did a plus one and all of the 8 were of the 20? Oh, God, that's horrible. Golf cannot, the PGA Tour cannot accept the notion that you have to develop people. You have to make them part of the public consciousness. You have to make your fans care about them, or otherwise, you're too reliant on superstars. That's where we are now, and that's why the FedEx Cup will not be determined in a way that makes sense, that makes golf purists happy, that makes golfers that were golf fans happy, that makes pro golfers happy and lets them flex their abilities, and that makes ultimately the sponsor, FedEx, who's putting up way the hell too much money for a bonus pool, happy too. All right, I'm going to take a break and tell you about our friends at 2Under. They are the purveyors of asset management. They make the best damn underwear there is. Period. End of story. They make underwear that is great for golf. It's unique to golf. They make underwear that's great for working out. Unique to working out. They make everyday wear underwear that's great for that purpose. And they make underwear that's perfect for when you go to sleep. That keeps you rested and keeps you happy while you sleep. They're famous Joey pouch keeps your boys separated from your body so that they stay dry, whatever you're doing, especially during a round of golf or a workout where they kind of get wet, there's chafing, and ugh, it's the worst. That doesn't happen. There's the no-drip tip, so if you don't quite get it all out. It doesn't get all over you. And the material just feels great along your body. There's lots of different designs. You can express your personality, whether you like certain patterns, like herringbone, like I do, whether you're like a certain college. They have collegiate prints, too. A little bit of everything for everybody. And they also have tremendous loungewear and other gear as well. So head over to 2under.com, the number 2UNDR.com. Use the promo code GNN20, and you're going to save 20% on any purchase you make. Not just your first purchase, every purchase. GNN20 at 2under.com. I want to talk briefly about the PGA of America announcing eight championships that are coming to Congressional Country Club 10-15 minutes from my house starting in 2022. It's a pretty wide-reaching agreement that runs from 2022 to 2036. It's pretty incredible. And in that time span, again, there will be eight tournaments Congressional hosts under the PGA of America banner. Two women's PGAs, 2022 and 2027. Two senior PGAs. The PGA of America Professional Championship. The Junior PGA Championship. Then they'll get, I believe I said senior PGA Championships. Then the 2031 PGA Championship and the 2036 Ryder Cup. That's pretty wild. I never thought in my life that the Ryder Cup would come to D.C. I never really thought of Congressional as a PGA of America venue, even though it hosted the 1976 PGA won by Dave Stockton. But forever, this has been an occasional, like every 15th year USGA property, where they've had three different U.S. Opens. The Ken Venturi Open, the Ernie Els Open in 97, the Rory Open in 2011, had a U.S. Senior Open. And for years, it had been a PGA Tour stop each year. And then they began every other year track with the Quicken Loans National. And then that contract got canceled when the tour had to subsidize the event. And it kind of fell on tough times, not having a sponsor. So it went next door to TPC Potomac and stayed there. And so with that commitment done, Congressional decided they would put in anywhere, the numbers kind of fly about, but anywhere from $20 to $30 million back into the club, improving the facilities, making the driving range better, improving some other stuff. I mean, Congressional has one of the highest initiation fees of any country club in the world. I think it's around $250,000. They also have one of the largest total memberships of any country club in the world. And so they're just raking in money all the time. They have two golf courses, Blue, which hosts pretty much everything, and Gold, which is also a pretty good golf course, actually. And they kind of took their assessment and decided to be a championship club, to be the one that hosts majors and things like a Ryder Cup instead of PGA Tour events. Into the future, they needed to make an investment in their club. So they have brought on Keith Foster, who redid Philly Cricket Club. He redid the old white TPC. He's a Northern Virginia native. He is a Reno king. I mean, he is just a resto king, really. Not a Reno, resto king. He does awesome restoration work with a lot of care. And so he's been brought in starting next year, basically the tail end of this year, but really next year, to do a full renovation, a restoration of the golf course toward what Devereaux Emmett created when he developed the golf course. Undoing a lot of the stuff that Reese Jones did when he redid the golf course. Probably will keep 10 as it was under Reese as a par 3. The golf course used to finish as an uphill par 3, basically, over water. And that was done away with when Reese Jones came in and made the old 17 into 18. Frankly, that was the right move. That should still be the finish to the golf course. So I think his 10 and 18 will survive, but other things will be restored back to kind of the way they were when Congressional was a little bit more wide open. There's been a tree removal project that's already been undertaken. Something like 100 trees have been already removed, even before Keith Foster gets his hands on it. More will be removed. More will be done. The golf course is going to improve dramatically, and the reward for that huge investment is going to be saying they have had the Ryder Cup, the PGA Championship, and all this other stuff. It's really great for the club. It's really great for the members, to be honest with you. They're going to get a better golf course out of it. And yeah, I know it's kind of about bragging rights to have a place, and you could hypothetically spend $20 million and not let anyone check out any of it by putting the course on display for the entire world to see. But there is a certain notoriety that comes with holding these things. I think they did the right thing with it. So what? I guess the response I got back, other than thank God Keith Foster is coming in, was why are they telling people about tournaments in 2036? And I started to think the same thing myself. I mean, I'm 35. I'll turn 36 next year. The Ryder Cup is 18 years from now that will be there. I will be 53 years old, nearly 54 years old. And I'm starting to think on these major venue announcements, these big tournaments, I could be dead by then. And I know a number of you are older than me. Now you're starting to think about, well, that's going to be awfully nice for the living to be able to watch the 2036 Ryder Cup at Congressional. I can't imagine what it will be like in the. I don't know what golf's going to be like in 18 years. I know Rory McIlroy is going to be 47 years old. He's probably going to be the captain of that team in 2036. But I can't imagine Rory at 47. I sure as hell can't imagine me at 53, nearly 54. So I try not to think about the actual what it would look like then, or what the game's going to be like. Just, oh, cool, that's way off in the future. So I prefer to think about the 2022 Women's PGA, which will be there. At least I know I won't quite be 40 yet. So let's go with that. And I can think about that. I think these kinds of deals were made in the past. They just now have become more commonplace, where you say, well, we're going to host this tournament and this tournament and this tournament. And the PGA of America or the USGA or whoever, that were the presenting body, really those two, they would stagger the announcements. Like, okay, we're going to tell you 6 years out we're hosting the PGA here, and then another 5 years we'll tell you the agreement we made 11 years ago to host the Ryder Cup here, whatever, in a timely fashion. Now it's not done that way. Now it's done as a huge package announcement, primarily for the club, the host club, so they can say, we're doing this, 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 and this. Boom. Look at us. So that's kind of a day for the club to celebrate, because there's going to be years and years and years and years of 15 years worth of work hosting these different tournaments over time, staggered over time, of course. And then it's also for the governing body, for the organization to say, look, we've got these things sewn up so far into the future, and they can go to their television partners, namely NBC, and for PGA of America, for the PGA Championship, now Turner, because the contract's going to end after next year, and they can go to potential TV partners and say, look, we've got everything lined up through this far into the future. Basically, the PGA of America, with a couple of exceptions, I think 2025 and 2026, is now known through 2031. 2031! That didn't happen when I was a kid. You'd have been happy to know it 3 years out. Now I know, basically, until I know where the majors are going to be played until my son almost gets through high school. What? That doesn't happen. But that's the way of the world now, because you have to guarantee all these rights fees. You have to guarantee how courses are used. And then you can use that for leverage to get more money for your rights. So that's the point of this exercise. I think there will be a point in time, probably when I'm in my 50s, when this won't happen in the same way, when it won't be so far out in advance, because it won't be necessary. The way people consume media will change, and so the leverage of knowing the venues and all that stuff probably will not be as valuable, but maybe it will be. It'll be interesting, but we probably won't be doing this podcast when I'm in my 50s, so I guess we'll just kind of have to keep an eye on it. I wanted to end the show with a couple of thoughts about just GNN. I've been at this with this is my only job, running GNN, running this podcast, for a little more than a year now. At the U.S. Open in 2017, Yahoo Sports said to me, we don't have budget for you anymore, as part of their acquisition by what's now called Oath as one company, but basically AOL and Verizon. And I was forced to go on my own. And the plan all along was really in 2018, sometime in 2018 early, I would break away from Yahoo and do this thing and run GNN on my own and figure out a way to make this a living. That was kind of the plan when I started with them in fall 2014 for the Ryder Cup in 2014, which is making me think about this now. They knew I would want to eventually run my own deal. And they supported that the entire way, as long as they could financially. And they were always great to work with. But now I've been in this the basically 15 months by myself. And it's been incredible to me to be able to survive this long. When I started last June, I didn't know how this was going to work. I didn't know how I would make money, and I didn't know how much I would make. I knew I would grow this year, and we were up about 75-80% audience-wise over 2017, which has made this financially feasible, at least pretty close to it. But I took on a lot of debt, not having a job, and I've lost several media jobs over the 8 years I've been in this world. And it started with the 2010 Ryder Cup. I lost a job with NBC, which actually turned into a job with Golf Channel, which was a good thing. Then I lost a job with Golf Channel because I wasn't a Golf Channel person. Then I lost a job with Back 9 Network. Then I lost a job with Billy Casper Golf. And then I lost a job with Yahoo. I lost really 4 jobs in 5 years. And so I've been through these periods of unknown and being unable to know if I'm going to be able to make a credit card payment. I've racked up a lot of credit card debt. I've paid down a lot of credit card debt. I've short sold houses to kind of deal with market fluctuations that just weren't ever going to go right in my way. I've done a lot of different things to try to stay above water. And I'm saying all of this because looking back on it, it's basically a miracle to me that this all has worked out so far. And in that sense, I mean that everyone's gotten paid that needs to get paid, or they will get paid. And that this continues to grow to a plan. I mean, there is a plan in place. And so the plan for this year was grow the audience by as much as you can to make sure that this is financially viable. And I can do that now. We reach about 600,000 people a month on the website. We've got this. We reach about 30,000 people a month on our podcast network. And it's really, I mean, it's remarkable. And the goal for the next few weeks in the off season is to continue to create content that's going to set us up to succeed next year with maybe not 80% growth year, but let's say 50%. So we can reach anywhere from 900,000 to 1 million people a month on our website. That's going to allow me to do a lot of things. It's going to allow me to not have credit card debt anymore, not have debts anymore. It's going to allow me to do the plan that I really wanted to do this year, but financially could not, and that is develop our video and audio products more. You probably know if you've listened to this show a long time. I've done this show since 2002, I believe, on and off. When I was with NBC and Golf Channel, I didn't do it, and I didn't do it with Back 9 Network, so it took about a 2.5-year hiatus. But for the most part, I've done it straight through for 16 years. Let's call it 13 and a half. And if you listen to old editions of this show, I used to have guests, and I used to have a weekly show, and the show was, frankly, a different tone, and it's one I really enjoy doing. I really enjoy having conversations with guests, having them come on and talk, and share their story, and me just kind of be the conduit and listening along with you almost, just kind of guiding the conversation. So that's the goal for next year, is to bring this show back to a little bit more of an interview show. Maybe still have shows like this where we kind of delve into a subject or two and just kind of talk me and you for a while. But I also want to have interview shows. And so that's one of my promises I've been making. And I wanted to explain to you why I haven't fulfilled it, because thinking back about the Ryder Cup always brings up a flood of memories about getting into this professionally and what the Ryder Cup has kind of meant to me in terms of mileposts in terms of my career. And next year, hence the push for YouTube, we're going to do more video. That was one of the big things I wanted to do last year and really needed to grow the audience, and wanted to do this year and really needed to grow the audience. So for 2019, part of my goal is to publish at least one, if not two, videos a day, put them on our YouTube channel, put them on our Amazon Fire, Roku, and hopefully Apple TV channels, and build a subscriber base. We have about 30,000 people that have downloaded our apps for those two services, and I hardly ever serve in video. And one of my goals is to fix that wrong for next year. So we're going to continue to do stuff that we've always done about equipment, and we'll do a daily video along the lines of the two of the first video that I've done, kind of summarizing the two big stories of the day. And we'll do a little bit of fantasy golf and golf betting. And we'll also do golf travel as well. So it'll be a little mix of everything, and expect that to come in the future. And I just wanted to say, I probably say this far too often because I'm kind of sappy, but I appreciate your support. It really means a lot to me that I'm able to do this for a living. And that, like I said, for the last 15 months or so, I've made it. It's been okay. It hasn't been easy. By no means has it been easy. But it's been okay. And I'm going to somehow reel in more this year than I ever have in my entire life. That's not that much. But it's good. It's good to pay the bills. It's good to get my children into daycare and pay them. It's good to kind of get back to square. And that's been part of my journey this year that I haven't really talked about. The content creation part is what I've tried to focus on, but the reality is, as a mostly one-man band helped by great people, by the likes of Mitch Lawrence and Darren Bunch and Eric Hart and Jay Flemma and Brian Orr and John Latton and Gianni, you kind of go down the line of people who do help on a regular basis or have helped intermittently over time. I'm also a kind of personal story, and I do this, I work quite hard at this, so that I can make sure I provide a good life for my family. And I also do this because this is what I love to do. I love talking about golf with you. I love exploring topics in our sport, pro golf, amateur golf, recreational golf, golf travel, the future of the game. I love doing that with you. I always say this. This is my favorite part of each week when I get to do this. This time where I just look at the levels as I talk, because it may be a one-way conversation with many of you, but with lots of others of you, it's a two-way conversation that's been going on for a long, long time, and I hope that continues. So thank you again for your support. It really means a lot to me, and keep your eyes peeled for more stuff in the future. But next week, we will do a show because it is the freaking Ryder Cup. Cannot wait. Love the Ryder Cup. I will be getting up way the hell too early to watch Ryder Cup. Action starts at 2 a.m. on Golf Channel on Friday and Saturday. It starts at 6 a.m. mercifully on Sunday. It's going to be fantastic, fantastic golf. Probably the deepest roster of 24 players in the history of the Ryder Cup against the official World Golf Ranking. All of the American side is in the top 25. The worst ranked player in the 24 is 44th in the world. It is incredible to have basically half of the world top 45 in the Ryder Cup. It just does not happen very often. So, cannot wait to see it. It's going to be awesome. We'll talk about it leading into it, and then we'll talk about it leading out of it. We'll get into the PGA Tour season, the new one a little bit in October and November, and then, as we traditionally do, kind of shut it down in December and come back in January. So, we've still got 2.5 really great months to talk about golf this year, and we're going to have two fantastic weeks in a row this week and next. I can't wait for them. Hope you'll enjoy them and come back and talk with me about them. If you can, if you listen to us through iTunes or through your Apple phone, please give us 5 stars in the podcast app. When you listen to our podcast, helps us reach more people. Leave me a comment. Shoot me an email, ryan@thegolfnewsnet.com. I always love hearing from you. Always want to talk golf with you. And check out GNN Plus if you're kind of a fantasy junkie. We've got some really good tools to help you make smart decisions about your golf betting, your fantasy golf team. Check out GNN Plus. It's just $10 for the year for our basic advice, and then $75 for the year for all the tools that so far have seen me winning good money. So, until next time, I'm Ryan Balanchy saying thank you for listening. Thanks for the company, and we'll talk to you next time on the 19th Hole Golf Show.